Okay. Well, we are ready to start. We're continuing with what we've done. We're starting with Jim Noble is going to discuss the agency accounts funded through our division, and then we're going on to Stephanie Anderson, who's the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Finance, and she's going to talk to us about internal controls and accountability measures. Yep.
Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. With me is Cecile Perkle, the Deputy Legislative Auditor. And, Madam Chair, I think there may have been a little bit of miscommunication. I wasn't quite sure that...
We'll listen to anything you have to say.
Okay.
So.
Well, because I think I will leave it to your good committee staff to talk to you about the agencies that are going to bring their budgets through, although obviously we do audit work for all of them. But I think what I'd like to do is just kind of recap what I said to the committee the last time I was here, and Madam Chair, you didn't have an opportunity to hear that, but I think we had a very good discussion and one that we really appreciated very much. But the key points are that Minnesota state government is very large, very complex, and it can be seen in a variety of ways, but it's certainly from our perspective, it's a very large, complicated financial enterprise. Now, to citizens and to you, it's the institution that delivers services, implements policies, does a lot of other things, but we think it is important for people to also see just how large and complicated the financial activities are, because we think that needs constant attention in terms of good financial management and specifically in terms of internal controls. And last time we were here, we talked about some of the issues that have been coming up in individual agency audits, and we also talked about the fact that we first, of course, look to the agencies to solve those problems. But we are seeing some real cross-cutting problems in state government that are, we think, systemic and need attention not only from the individual agencies, but from the organization which does provide the financial leadership, financial management leadership in state government across state agencies, and that's the Department of Finance, now called Minnesota Management and Budget. And so we've communicated with some of the members of this committee and in other committees as well that we would like to see the Department of Finance, as I will continue to call them, provide leadership in a variety of ways that is preventative as well as just corrective of some of the problems that exist in state government. And we have pointed to, for example, the model that we see at MNSCU, where the Chancellor's Office and from the Deputy Chancellor for Finance provides a good deal of leadership and doesn't just leave it to the individual campuses to decide how they're going to address, resolve, and prevent financial management problems. And so we see MNSCU presenting a model that we think is one that the state might emulate in terms of a more centralized leadership on financial management. We also have pointed to an area, another model that I know members of this committee are very familiar with, and that is the role played by the Office of Enterprise Technology, where you have a very strong emphasis on security, and agencies are given guidelines and requirements for their security issues. And we think, again, that's a model that emphasizes the enterprise, not just the individual fragmented agencies being responsible for their problems and issues. So that's what we presented, Madam Chair, last time. I know you have people here from Minnesota Management and Budget that are going to address some of these issues. Cecile Perkle, the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division, is very much involved in the details of all of our audit work and sees these this pattern of problems that we've been uncovering in internal controls, and she may want to speak a little bit more to them.
Thank you, Jim. I am Cecile Perkle. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor responsible for the Financial Audit Division within the Legislative Auditor's Office. Over the last few months, we've issued about 18, 20, 25 reports that really identified and reported on what we thought were some pretty significant areas of internal control weakness within state government. And as we looked at those reports and discussed them internally, we said, you know, there really seems to be a common theme here of weak internal controls in some specific areas that we looked at. Separation of duties within processes, either within the way the process is done or within the way that access is provided within the accounting system. And a real awareness on our part, and should be on the part of the agencies as well, that this creates a pretty significant flaw in their design of internal controls when one employee can have the ability to process a transaction from beginning to end. That's a serious concern to us. And from our standpoint, if it's one employee, it's as much of a weakness as that if it's 25 employees or 100 employees. So we really look to agencies to either eliminate that access or design controls that can watch what that employee is doing or provide an early warning if something's going wrong. But sometimes that's difficult for agencies to really understand the complexities of the state's accounting system. And we feel that the Department of Finance may be able to provide some guidance and some oversight there in making sure that access to the system and the risks involved with incompatible access in certain areas are really well understood. Another area, and really surprised us a little bit with the weaknesses in receipt areas around the state. It seems to us fairly intuitive that if you're getting money in the mail or people are coming up to your cashiering window and giving you cash or check, that you've got a pretty strong responsibility to safeguard those assets and get them in the bank. That's a state statute that does require daily depositing of receipts that exceed $250. That's a really low threshold. Some agencies have felt that that's too low, but that is a statutory level where legislators have determined that once you've got more than $250 on hand, it should be in the bank. So we do audit to that threshold, and we do find agencies that aren't auditing timely or that they're routing receipts around through the departments without documenting that they've received money. The Department of Health, in their report, they had 35 different areas within three different buildings that were receiving cash, and they weren't adequately monitoring when that money came in, how long it took to get to the bank, whose hands was it passing through. In more than several of those areas, the receipts were going to a fairly unrestricted area within the building where they make coffee and photocopies, and the receipts were sitting in incoming mail bins within the department. That's not secure, where there are 1,000 people in that building who are all state employees, but, you know, it's not open to the general public, but still those receipts should be tracked from the minute they come into the agency and make sure that they get in the bank. That was surprising to us that a big agency would do that. We also look at receipts in smaller venues like the Barbers and Cosmetology Licensing Board, where they came to us and said, gee, it doesn't look like things are balancing out. We seem to have a discrepancy between the licenses that we've issued and the money that got in the bank. They were off about $10,000. And it appears that one of their employees perhaps was pocketing the money as it was coming in the door and issuing licenses even though the money wasn't going in the bank. But basic internal controls would have detected that. If somebody was reconciling the bank account, if somebody was recording the money as it came in the door and making sure that money got in the bank, those kinds of basic internal controls were missing in that environment and allowed that discrepancy to occur. And, you know, it seems to us that it was a fraud or a theft. Because of the lack of controls, it's really hard to determine who exactly was responsible for that, and that has been referred to the Hennepin County Attorney's Office for investigation. So the receipts area was really concerning to us. I think your interest would be that if the state's collecting money, it's all getting into the state's bank accounts and available for use, the appropriate use of those funds. Kind of some more of an internal control structure, two of the elements of an internal control structure that we think are generally lacking in state agencies is a real assessment of their process and identification of where their risks lie. And then linking that, saying this is a risk to us, what are the controls that we need to have in place for that? Agencies have controls, but they're often not really connected well to the risks in their processes. And another thing is that the management of the agency has a responsibility to monitor those controls and make sure that they are being performed. So if one of your controls is that a reconciliation is supposed to be done every month between the bank and the accounting records, somebody in management in that agency should be making sure that gets done. It should not be a surprise to them if we come in and say, gee, you know, you haven't done a reconciliation for 6 months. that's a lack of monitoring and a lack of oversight by the management of the department, in addition to a lack of a good control procedure. So we are concerned about those things, especially in small agencies. They struggle with understanding what is good internal controls. How do we design good control procedures? What are really the risks that our processes face? We think that's a good area for guidance and training from a central office like Minnesota Management and Budget, but also in the really technical areas of what can you do in the accounting system when you're given this type of access, and is there an incompatibility?
I guess it might be better to ask the people from finance. But does the state accept credit cards for all of these transactions?
Madam Chair, members, there is some processing with credit cards, yes, and some online processing as well.
Do they still charge an extra fee for that or not? They did it first with the online processing.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I don't know that.
All right, we'll ask the people who paid to know. So, any other questions? Steve?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Question for either of you. I guess there's no other delicate way to answer this or to ask it, so I won't try. And that is, do you think that you're being treated as kind of the backstop or the safety net? Do you get the sense that there might be people who are implicitly saying, well, we don't have the resources to internally audit this. OLA will find it. You know, if there's a problem, they'll catch it.
Madam Chair and
Ms. Purple?
We have, I think, been seen as part of the control process more historically, that our audits come in and will identify the weaknesses where there's been some result from Sarbanes-Oxley implementation at a higher level, and then as that's filtered down into audit standards and expectations for government audits, more clearly saying it really is management's responsibility to know whether or not their controls are running the way that they're supposed to be, and drawing a line and saying that that is not audit's role, to tell internal management whether or not their controls are good. Historically, yes, I think that has been true, but we are trying to draw that line more clearly so that agencies understand better. We have a role to play. We have an important role to report to you about how agencies are functioning, but we should not be what agencies are relying on as a way to know whether or not their controls are effective.
And Madam Chair, if I could just elaborate a little bit, because this really is a very important point that Representative Simon raises, and there really is a management responsibility here, and I think this is something that has been emphasized recently, in recent years, in the private sector a great deal with Sarbanes-Oxley, and you know some of those changes from that legislation said to the management of corporations, you have to literally sign your financial statements as a verification from management that they are true and faithful to general accounting standards and all of the things that it isn't simply up to the auditors to tell us if they are. You have to have the first responsibility in terms of telling the world that you're being completely truthful and honest. And that carries on into the organization. It's called tone at the top in the audit and accounting world, that management has a responsibility to emphasize internal controls throughout the organization. And we do think that this concept, this principle, needs to be carried over into Minnesota state government much more than it is, because I think you're absolutely right that I think a lot of people have thought that we'll leave it up to the auditors to determine whether or not our controls are adequate, and if they don't find any fraud or they don't find any significant errors, then everything must be okay. I think that the reason why this is fundamentally a mistaken idea is not just a matter of principle, it's a matter of practicality, and that is because we have very limited resources. We get to some organizations only once every 3 or 4 years, and so if people are waiting for us to determine whether or not they have adequate internal controls, a lot of things can happen in those 3 or 4 years before we get there. And then after we're gone, what happens the next day in terms of people administering the money, engaging in financial transactions? Are the internal controls that we recommended and management said would be in place, are they sustained over time? As Ms. Ferkel said, management's responsibility is not just to put internal controls in place, but to ensure that they are there on a daily, hourly basis. That is management's responsibility. And so that's why we are coming to you saying that our role is important as auditors. We think it's absolutely essential, particularly in the public sector, to have a level of accountability. But we think it is by no means a sufficient mechanism to ensure accountability and integrity in managing the state's financial affairs. That ultimately is management's responsibility. And a lot of times it really does get down to the details of what's going on with money that's coming in the door, that credit cards are being used, that bank reconciliations are being done. You know as well as I that many of the people that are appointed to high positions to manage state agencies are not necessarily well-versed in accounting and management. They may be there more because of their political affiliation or because of their association with a particular policy or program. And that's fine. That's an important part of government, too. We're not saying that's not a legitimate way in which people are appointed to those positions. But when you have a large department or middle-sized department or even a small one, at some point in that organization, you've got to get to somebody that will pay attention to all of those details, who understands internal controls, financial transactions, getting money in the bank, reconciling to bank accounts. All of those things need to be a part of every aspect of state government, whether it is the Department of Transportation, Corrections, or even if you get to an organization, and I mentioned this last time I was here, like the Combative Sports Commission, which is two people. These things need to be there too. These ideas of get the money in the bank, reconcile to the bank account, all of those things, even if you're just two people, that is all a part of maintaining good financial integrity in state government as well. And we just happened to go recently to the Combative Sports Commission, and we found that none of those good practices of financial management were occurring. In this case, because the person who was appointed to be the executive director of that particular organization had no knowledge or familiarity with any of those kinds of concepts of financial management. He was appointed to be the executive director because he's a former boxer and probably a very good person to have in that position for that reason. But then who does pay attention to the details of financial management for an organization that is literally, Madam Chair, taking cash in their hands at combative sport events on behalf of the state and not getting it into the bank until many days later? So anyway, I didn't mean to go off here. But it's a good question.
Any other questions? Now no one's willing to ask a question because you set the standard too hard. Jeremy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nobles, Ms. Ferkel, I'm just reviewing the documents that are in our packet on the internal audit report from the Department of Finance. I'm still going to call it the same. Mr. Nobles, I'm with you. From both 05 and then 07, references to eliminating funding for the function, the internal audit function of the Veterans Home Board, defunding from the state perspective of military affairs, restructuring, leaving through reduction in size of agencies, internal offices at MNSCU and DNR, and I'm sure that I'm only scratching the surface in terms of other agencies and departments where we've either seen a decrease or an overall elimination of that function, but also looking elsewhere. In 2005, seeing that essentially the Higher Ed Services Office internal auditors resulted in repayments exceeding $350,000. So I'm wondering if you can characterize any of those agencies that have lost their function or seen them dramatically reduce, say the DNR, what has been the cost of losing those internal audit functions?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Kalin, I think the cost is in terms of accountability. Maybe there's actually been a dollar cost of money that has gone missing. But I certainly know when you don't have eyes and ears from an internal accounting point of view in an organization, particularly a large organization, you lose some accountability. We know, for example, that where there is a good, strong internal audit function, that good things happen. There are more eyes and ears with a particular perspective on financial activities, and some of that results in those internal auditors looking into things that wouldn't otherwise be looked into, reinforcing good internal controls, but also sometimes bringing things to our attention that wouldn't otherwise be brought to us. I mentioned Minsky, and John Osmondson is director of internal audits at Minsky, and we work very closely with Mr. Osmondson and have a very good reporting relationship in terms of things that they find, and they find a good deal. You know, Minsky isn't perfect. I don't mean to suggest that at all, and I'm sure Mr. Osmondson would be the first to second that. What they do have is a very strong focus on financial integrity and accountability. They are very willing to find the problems and to deal with them and not hide them. And so when they find things, they immediately alert us that they have found a theft, that they have found some breach of security, or a variety of other things. And then we sort out whether they're going to do the investigation or the audit, or we are, whether we're going to take it to the local law enforcement authorities. And so I think where we see that kind of staff in an organization, it's a good thing. We also have that at the Department of Transportation. Now, frankly, the federal government really requires that. It's not, I think, so much the initiative of the state, but it's the federal government that says, we give you a lot of money to build roads and highways and maintain them, and so we expect very close accounting and an internal audit function to ensure that that money is being spent in compliance with federal requirements. There are a few other places where there are internal audit functions, and we think that's important. Unfortunately, as you point out, we're going in the other direction. Those positions are being eliminated in a variety of organizations, and we think that's not good for accountability. But, you know, we understand when push comes to shove and dollars are short, oftentimes it's that person sitting in a cubicle in St. Paul who may be an account clerk or an internal auditor or whatever that gets eliminated.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair, maybe more of a comment than a question, just that, I mean, your closing thought there, Mr. Nobles, is what I'm struggling with as well, in that we're, even if we were to somehow be able to magically, even if we had a money tree, which we don't in Minnesota, but even if we had a money tree, we would still, to get out of this session with a balanced budget, we're going to have to make pretty deep cuts across the board. And there's an incredible value to increasing trust in government, and which I heard you saying, you know, that the cost is losing accountability, which we need to increase accountability and transparency. And so I think we're going to have to struggle with, it sounds to me like there is both a management ethic that needs to happen absent the funding to have the appropriate internal auditors and offices fully funded, as well as funding as many of, and maybe we need to do some serious restructuring to ensure that all the offices and the agencies that need to have them are fully funded or nearly fully funded, and that they're only working 200% of the time, not 400% of the time.
Representative Kiffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I'm noticing here in the internal audit progress report that we already have 10 state agencies that have voluntarily established internal audit functions. Has that program worked for these? And it looks like, I can't see here for sure, but it looks like they voluntarily chose it and then created this within their own budget. Has this program, which already covers 10 state agencies, been accomplishing the kind of goals and things that you've talked about here?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think the report that you referenced was produced by Minnesota Management and Budget, and so I'll let them speak to that. But Some agencies do, at their own initiative, create internal audit functions. Typically, they're quite small, and they may be a person or two. As I mentioned, some, as in MnDOT, may have some requirements behind them. At MnSCU, at MnDOT, it's the federal requirement. At MnSCU, it was really at the initiative of the board itself, and particular leaders on the MnSCU board that really felt financial integrity was an extremely important aspect of that organization, and so they took the initiative themselves to create that office. So they come about in a variety of ways. But yes, I think that if they're used effectively, as I said, I think that they can really have some impact on accountability. And we know of some places in state government, as I've mentioned before, where they have had a real impact and been an effective instrument of accountability. But they need to be used appropriately. You can't simply hire internal auditors and sit them in a cubicle and then they will automatically produce accountability. I mean, I think you have to have a strategy in terms of how you're going to deploy them and utilize them. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but you might also want to address it to the folks who are going to follow us.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To follow up on Representative Kalin's question, he asked what the cost was of a lack of internal controls. My question would be to focus more on, remind us of some of the specifics. I know you've done a number of audits in the last year or two that have found specific dollar amounts that have been misspent or missing or in some cases just stolen basically through fraud or embezzlement from the state. Do you have any numbers to give us kind of a sense of the dollars that have been lost?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, you know, it ranges from the $5,000-$10,000 at the Barber's Board to the $1 million fraud at DHS and various things in between. I think some of you are familiar with the report we did on the Conservation Officers Conference, where we thought there was some hundreds of $300,000+, as I recall off the top of my head, that we thought was inappropriately used as public money, used for essentially private recreational purposes. So I can't necessarily sit here at this moment and tally up exactly what that total is. But I think, again, our concern is even where you cannot demonstrate that there's been a fraud, that money has been stolen or misappropriated or misused in some way, if you find weak internal controls, basically you're saying there is a pathway to that. And we are as much, if not much more, about prevention than going out and doing investigations to get people, you know, prosecuted.
Madam Chair, Ms. Provo, you can, I guess, respond to this too. I guess the question then would be, would it be a fair summary to say that the state has lost millions of dollars as it's some result of a lack of internal controls in state agencies, boards, commissions, etc.?
Madam Chair, I can provide a couple more details than Jim. I know it's pretty fresh in my memory here, and we've been out talking to different committees about the Minneapolis Vet Home audit. One aspect of that was a look at controls over overtime. $2 million of overtime every year. We identified 9 people that had claimed overtime, 30 to 70 hours, every pay period over a 3-year period. And I happened to be working at home that day. I sat back in my chair and I said, can you really do that? Can you work that hard, that long? I'm skeptical of that. We looked further to try to match those hours up to work schedules. We could only validate about 40% of it. Were they defrauding the state? I don't know. We asked the administration of the Vets Home when we had our exit conference, what do you think? Does this surprise you? They said, no, not really. These people are really having to work really hard. I'm still skeptical about it. How many millions of dollars of possible inappropriate overtime was charged? Was there any? Maybe it was zero. Maybe it was $2 million. I don't know. But certainly, they weren't looking at overtime. They weren't authorizing timesheets. They weren't authorizing overtime. And I think more importantly, they weren't reviewing overtime. They didn't come up with a list of 9 people who had received overtime every pay period for 3 years. That's something our audit did. I think that's a management responsibility and a lack of controls in the management area that certainly could have constrained and allowed at least an ability for the agency to demonstrate that these were legitimate expenses, but I'm not convinced that they were. Another example is when we were at the Department of Labor and Industry and we looked at travel expenses. Not a real big area, but we looked at compliance with and evidence for travel expenses. Mileage, generally, you should take the distance between 2 points and then separately record whether or not you're traveling around. They had a person there who, he's an inspector, he travels every day. Every day there's mileage. But when we looked at the support for the mileage that he claimed, at a rate of 50 cents a mile, he overclaimed $10,000 worth of mileage. That the department did not have controls in place to detect. His supervisor signed off on those reimbursements. His supervisor wasn't checking the mileage. They weren't asking for validation of distances between points. So, you know, it's difficult to say the extent of that, but we do definitely see when controls are weak, there are people that make mistakes and there are people that take advantage of that situation.
Right. Madam Chair, one more follow-up, I guess, to you to testify. I'm trying to see if there's a line between the internal audit functions, internal controls, and the money that has been lost. I mean, I hear your testimony to say that internal controls and the internal audit function would have stopped or should have stopped a lot of this money from being overbilled, overcharged, disappearing, being misspent, whatever.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Representative Winkler, you specifically said internal controls or internal audit?
Both, I guess, Madam Chair.
Because if you specifically reference internal controls, for example, with the fraud at DHS, and we'll be issuing a document on this possibly next week or the week after, I think very clearly that fraud was perpetrated because of weak internal controls. It was certainly perpetrated by a person, an individual, who has now pleaded guilty, who had criminal intent. But this, I think, is the important point. Internal controls can stop someone with criminal intent from being able to perpetrate fraud. Not maybe always, but in this particular case, and we'll put these facts before you soon, I think it can clearly be demonstrated that stronger internal controls of various kinds would have either completely prevented that fraud or certainly detected it sooner. Because you see weak internal controls in areas that Ms. Ferkel was just referring to, and that is a person who had far too much access to the accounting system, who could exercise clearly incompatible duties, and a variety of other things. So, yes, you can, in many instances, I think, say if there were strong internal controls, the things that have happened at DHS, at the Barber's Board, another example, the nursing home situation that was referenced, internal controls would have either certainly detected those sooner or possibly even prevented them altogether.
Madam Chair, and what about the relationship of internal auditors to internal controls and how those are implemented and enforced and so on?
Well, again, Representative Winkler, I think it depends on how an internal auditor is used within an organization, but typically if you have someone who is really an internal auditor with the proper qualifications and orientation, at the very least you have somebody there who is a voice and a force for these kinds of concerns. You know, one of the things that we see often going on in state government is that there necessarily is a real focus on the program, on the policy, and we understand that. That mostly is what state government is about, is delivering service, managing programs. And so most of the people who are in agencies have that kind of orientation. But we need to find somebody within all of these organizations, as I said, small or large or middle-sized, who, and I hope this doesn't sound inappropriate, but we need to find somebody that sort of thinks like us, thinks like auditors. And maybe that is to bring a little more suspicion and ask more questions and be a little less deferential towards authority. Be willing to say what's going on here. Just because Bill authorized this vendor, do we have the documentation for what service this vendor really delivers, and is he really out there and qualified? And so you get somebody in an organization, if you have a good internal auditor, who is more suspicious, asks more questions, and sees the relevance of the internal controls and doesn't simply dismiss them as a lot of red tape and bureaucratic process. They are there for a reason, and they are there to ensure financial integrity, because, and we feel quite strongly about this, that there really is a, of necessity, a very high bar in government for delivering financial integrity. You know, in the private sector, there is the force of the marketplace, which is a very powerful force, and the bottom line is profit. But what is the force in government that is going to ensure financial integrity and deliver a bottom line, which I think is accountability? It's got to be people who really do pay attention to these kinds of details to ensure that every dollar that comes in, that is extracted by government, is spent for an appropriate economic and useful purpose. I mean, that's what this is really ultimately all about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Noble's two-part question. First, where is GASB at in terms of actually implementing a Sarbanes-Oxley-like requirement for the public sector?
Mr. Chairman, and for those of you who are not completely initiated into the terminology here, GASB is the organization that sets accounting standards for government, Government Accounting Standards Board. It was created some years ago by a consortium of various public organizations, but with support of the private sector as well, to establish accounting principles and standards that that government has to follow. Those are the standards that are used to compile the state's financial statements, for example, and we audit to those. There is a lot of discussion about whether Sarbanes-Oxley principles should be imposed into the public sector, into government. If that's going to happen, I couldn't tell you, but I know it's an active discussion, and I think it would bring some essential and important principles into greater focus and attention if we did that. But as you well know, not everybody is completely satisfied with the application of Sarbanes-Oxley even in the private sector, so there's quite a bit of debate about it.
Follow-up along those lines, I guess, sort of, in the private sector, an external auditor and the risk incumbent on them in providing the audit opinion provides kind of an extra degree of accountability and risk management. Have we ever, as a state, utilized external auditors? Or have we contemplated that in some of these internal control reviews?
Madam Chair and members, we do use CPA firms for a number of audits. We work with and have jurisdiction over some organizations where, for a variety of reasons, particularly where those organizations need annual financial statements. For example, the Air Force Commission has a CPA firm that does their financial statement audit, although we have audit jurisdiction and build on that from time to time. That is also the practice that we follow as a housing finance agency. But we do audit some financial statements as well. We audit the financial statements of the state, of the Mosquito Control Commission, of the State Fair. So there are occasions when, again, for a variety of reasons, various public organizations want to use an outside firm to do some audit work. And I think that can work rather well. I think they do not often bring, though, the same intense focus on compliance that we would, because we see ourselves not just as auditors, but as legislative auditors. And we not only play a role in terms of ensuring internal controls, but we ensure compliance with what you say are the requirements in law. I'll give you an example. We recently issued an audit on the Department of Agriculture where we made an issue of how they were recording and utilizing their frequent flyer mileage. This is something an auditor from a CPA firm would not look at, I don't think, because in the corporate world, I don't know that they would think of it as the issue that it is in the public sector. So you as a legislature have passed a law that says that if the state employee goes and travels at state expense, the frequent flyer mileage that is accumulated is not that employee's property. It's public property. It's state property. And it has to be handled in a certain way. And because you've set that standard, and we're legislative auditors, we pay a lot of attention to that, and we call people on that issue when they're not compliant. So I think, in sum, there's a role for both. And where we think we can't get to an organization in a timely way to do financial statement audit works, we certainly defer to their desire to have a CPA firm do that work.
If I might follow, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I was referring more to the internal audit and the kind of straight-up control reviews as compared to actually the financial statement audit. You use external firms to assist in the control, the straight-up control reviews and the internal audit reviews?
Madam Chair, Representative, we are the external auditors for the state in that regard. I mean, when we go in and do an audit, we're not reporting the results just internally to the department, but as an internal auditor, mm-hmm. we do. But to the public and to the legislature. And so if you're asking, do we supplement what we do with,
yes.
We would have no financial resource to do that.
But, Representative Downey, if you're asking, do agencies do that, they certainly have that option if they want to supplement their internal audit work. They don't have an internal auditor. They want to bring in an outside firm to examine their internal controls. I don't think we would say you can't do that. They have the resources to do it, and they have that focus, and they want that help. I think we would probably welcome that for them to care enough about their internal controls. And again, if our resources are stretched and we're not able to get to them, and they want to do that, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nobles, I've been reading through this memo you put together for Representative Winkler and listened to your testimony about the Office of Management and Budget, and it very clearly outlines, as you've outlined before, that the department needs to ensure accountability, integrity, and strong internal controls, et cetera, laid out in statute. Talks a little bit about the department isn't that involved in financial management once budgets are established. So what I'm trying to figure out, and I will ask the office later, but I would like your professional opinion, either of the two of you, on what does this mean in terms of we're obviously facing a huge budget crisis. What are we talking about to get these things done? What would that department need to do? And I know you want us to ask them that, but I would rather ask an outside auditor what they think it would take in terms of staff time. You talked a little bit about the enterprise approach here. What are we looking at to make these things happen in your mind as far as staff time, staff costs? I don't have a sense at all at what this means in actual real dollar amounts. I don't really know if the suggestion is they're not appropriating the money that they have wisely, or if they're underfunded, we need to spend more on them. I'm trying to get an idea to get this done correctly in your mind, what this would take. Because I can ask them, but I want to know what you think that it would take to get them to where they need to be.
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, I'm sure they will not like my answer. Because I don't think necessarily it takes a lot more staffing and money to do this. I think it needs, if you're asking me, I think it needs some shift in their orientation. They already have the statutory authority, and they're already involved in some areas where they have a policy or they have a role that's already been defined. It's more a matter of asserting themselves, I think, as the chief financial office of the state of Minnesota. And, I mean, we can cite a meeting that we just came from. And that has to do with an issue, it's very technical, so I won't get into that, but it has to do with how the state is defining flow through funds, federal funds, to local entities. And I think finance has a much could play a much stronger role in helping state agencies implement the federal definitions and requirements. But by their definition of their role, they leave that up to individual departments to define how they are going to designate certain federal funds. And it has a lot of implications for local units of government and for the auditors of local units of government. And in that meeting, I just thought that there was an opportunity for finance to play a much stronger leadership role. But that's true in a lot of areas where we have gone in and found concerns and issues. We finished a report recently on GO bonds, for example, an area, again, where in that report we call for the Department of Finance to play a stronger role. I don't know that it's going to take a lot more money or staffing for them to do that. I think they simply need to see themselves in a different light, as in fact the chief financial office of the state of Minnesota, that has an enterprise-wide responsibility, and that it is simply not up to individual departments to decide how they're going to construct their internal controls, how they're going to define certain things related to federal funds, or a variety of other things. So I'm sure they'll tell you they will need more staffing, and that undoubtedly would help them. But what I think we are looking towards is a different concept and definition that the department has of its role. Now, maybe a commissioner of finance is not just on his own or her own able to define that role, because it does start to bump into other state officials. And, you know, I think governors also define what the role is of a commissioner of finance relative to other commissioners. I've certainly seen that over my career. So how much authority and discretion does a commissioner of finance have to tell the commissioner of transportation or commerce or whatever, these are the things you have to do as a part of the enterprise of state government? I'll go again to another example. I know that the Department of Finance interacted to some degree with the Combative Sports Commission on the way it was operating, but they basically gave them guidance and advice and left it there. I think more was really needed. I think some real direction saying to them, frankly, this is the way it's going to be. You are a part of state government, and this is the way you're going to operate. You're not going to take the cash in hand and then deposit it in the bank 3 or 4 days later. That's not the way we work in state government. And Mr. Executive Director, if you can't get your house in order, you're not going to be a part of our family. I think that's the role the Commissioner of Finance needs to play, but obviously that needs to be backed up. Now, I think, frankly, you have a role to play as well. I respect the role of the governor in appointing his commissioners and other people in state government, but you in law have defined what the role of the Commissioner of Finance is. And I think these words should mean something. And I think you have the prerogative to say what you expect from any commissioner or any official in state government. So I don't know if I've been completely responsive to your question.
I'll go on, but I do remind people that we do want to hear from the Department of Finance, too, so we do need to get to that. That's going to happen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Noble. I appreciate that, but that's very helpful because it's hard to ask people who work in their own job and what they think about, you know, it's going to be more difficult to answer for them. But it seems to me, I appreciate what you said about not taking a lot of extra, takes a shift in orientation, but to me, by the fact that you just released 16 audits that were horrific shows to me that there are very, very strong systematic problems with what we have. And I don't see how just, you know, having two employees maybe go from working on this to working on that is going to fix the problem. I strongly want us to fix this problem because I'm tired of seeing audit after audit come back and it's the same groups and we come back and shame on you, we're going to fund you again, but don't do it again, shame on you. So I want to get to the root of the problem and I want to be able to fix the problem because that is our job here. But it seems like there's such a huge systematic problem, it can't just be shifting some orientation. And so I think there's got to be something, a major shift in how they do business, whether right or wrong or how they've done it. But I'm just surprised that you feel it would just be a mere shift. I mean, I'm not sure how many auditors you have on staff or what your budget is, but your department has done that full time, and you're still only able to get to them every 3 or 4 years. And so I'm having a hard time understanding why we wouldn't need to have a major increase to be able to accomplish what you're saying. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I can't wait to hear from the office to find out, but I have a really hard time understanding how it could just be saying to an employee, well, you're not going to focus on this today, you're going to focus on that today.
I understand your issue, Representative Pepin, and again, you know, we could all do more with more. It doesn't mean we'll do better with more. And we need to, in some ways, do both. We need to do more and we need to do better. But we all have to prioritize, and I'm simply trying to face the reality of the situation you face. I know, for example, that at the end of this legislative session, I will probably have a smaller budget and fewer auditors. I hope that doesn't happen, but that's the reality I think we're facing. I've already gone through that for my office. We used to have an organization of 80 people. Now we have 60. That's the result of the last budget cut. But was our conclusion after we downsized from the last budget cut that somehow we were excused from doing our job up to the highest standards? I don't think so. That's not the way we took it. So, yeah, everybody will feel more comfortable in doing their job with more money and more resources. And, I mean, I don't mean to sound unrealistic or flippant about it, but given what we face, I just don't think we can sit here and say that given the problems that we have, we will only solve them if we're given more money.
What if we put you on a bounty system?
I don't
you
think
don't
that's
have
a
to
good idea.
You know, Madam Chair, some people already think we're mean enough on a bounty system.
You'd have to bring the tails in. Okay, we do.
Just one.
And then we do have to get to finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members and Mr. Nobles. Having some experience with this, I wholeheartedly agree with the concept of enterprise responsibility for the Chief Financial Office of the State of Minnesota, and that this is the way Minnesota does it. And I think that you've really hit upon it and have said it well in regards to what you have done, and I think that there's always changes involved in sometimes the leadership or those things, and we certainly respect that. But I think there also should be an expectation, though, that the systems by which some of these critical core things are being done have a standard that says this is the way, according to General Accounting, it's just all right here, and that there should be training and expectations and accountability and everything else systematically in accordance with that. And we've done things like that, but I think you need that that Chief Financial Office of the state to support what is done within those. And so I just felt that this was just too much. I just had to, Madam Chair, members, speak to this particular issue and say, I think you're right. I'm looking forward, though, to hearing them, MMB, discuss what they might have in mind as well. I just really thought I needed to affirm you in that.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll probably continue this discussion. Now, until we get to governance budget, our schedule is a little so. Don't feel that you're pressured to finish everything you have to say in a half an hour. We'll be perfectly happy to have you back another day.
So thanks, Madam Chair. I hope we will be back to talk some more. We'll get the computer set up here so that we can walked you through. But just for the record, my name is Stephanie Andrews. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Finance, otherwise known as Minister of the Management and Budget, as we work through our transition due to the merger of Finance and Employee Relations earlier this year. We want to spend some time today.
I do have a question. Before you start, since you brought up the name issue, have you done a calculation? I did a crude calculation on it. Have you done the calculation of the amount of state time that it takes to say Minnesota Management and Budget instead of Finance? And then to also add, when someone says, what's that? That used to be the Department of Finance. And multiply that by the number of employees in the state and the number of times they have to say it over the course of a day or a week or something. Have you, is that, was that ever part of your calculation?
Madam Chair, that hasn't been part of our calculation.
Okay.
But
I did it crudely, but I don't want
to. We're looking forward to getting rid of that otherwise known as, and so hope to have some legislation before you to make it formal. Takes everybody
a little. We're intending to help you along that path.
That would be really super, Madam Chair.
Representative Bing.
Madam Chair, don't forget to add in to all of your calculations the cost to redo all the...
Oh, no, I didn't do it. I'm sure they used all their old dictionary.
Oh, okay. I'm sure we have to put labels over the old stuff.
Oh, okay.
We are still... can't give up our thrifty nature too easily here.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, as members, as we start here, really important discussion, really difficult discussion, I think, because all of us would like to come before you and have absolutely nothing here to talk about, but that isn't the case that we're in. And so we want to talk to you today a little bit about what we are doing. We want to talk to you about some options that we've been considering as we go forward. And then after the governor's budget is out, I think we'll be back to talk to you a little bit more. But most importantly, I want to start off by making it clear how seriously we take our responsibility for financial management as do the agencies that we work with. I think it would be a surprise to many of them to hear that we don't have any statewide perspective, or that we don't exercise controls fairly carefully. We are in, traditionally, and we're comfortable with that, the role of the enforcer and the bad cop, but we also try to do that with a fair amount of oversight and training and winning compliance that helps people do their jobs as best they can. In the end, the agencies and the way that our policies have been put forward, the agency management has primary responsibility to design and implement and maintain effective internal controls, and our role there is to support them. We have, over the years, I don't bring it up as an excuse, but simply as context, since the year 2000, we've been reduced by about 30% for the two agencies without a decrease in responsibility. We try as best we can to maintain a pretty high standard, but we really have shifted and continue to look at how do we provide upfront training and support to agencies, how do we provide consultation on problems as they arise so that we can work through things. We don't have the staff to do a back-end auditing function. We will not, I think, in any realistic scenario ever have that staff. So again, we really focus on how do we make sure that agencies understand what they should be doing, how do we provide training to get them there, how do we get policies in place to make sure that that's happening. There are places where we're not hitting the mark. I think that's always going to happen. We want to make sure it happens less and less. In our view, certainly any dollar that isn't spent the way that you intended to or the way it should be, that's not right. And we want to do our best, too, to make sure that we can provide an important role in helping make sure that agencies can do the best that they can do. Going on to talk a little bit about the roles within the executive branch, what we do, we work closely with agencies to develop policies and procedures. We review their spending plans. There were some comments made about our oversight role basically stopping as the budgets were enacted. And I think what you're going to hear today is some of the work that we do with agencies on an ongoing basis to make sure that as spending plans are put in place that they're reflecting the intent of the legislature, and then also that we're ensuring that agency heads are reviewing those plans as they go forward. Could that be better? Absolutely. Is there a way in every agency to ensure that up and down the chain of command people are understanding the spending plans at a detailed level? No. We really want to do more. We'll talk with you about some options about how we can do more to ensure that more people understand that and understand their management responsibility. But that is a challenge. We absolutely agree with the words that you heard from the legislative auditor about a management responsibility and a code of conduct and a culture that's important to have in agencies that make sure that those details get done, because without that culture, without that understanding, you can have all the policies in the world and it isn't going to make a difference. And so we absolutely understand and agree with that perspective. As part of that, we provide training and outreach to agencies, and we also, in the department, and this is one of the places where our agency has very significant dual roles, we operate and maintain the statewide systems that provide the tools for agencies to do their actual transactions, to do some reporting that helps them to audit the work that they've done. And so the state's accounting and procurement system, the state's payroll and benefits system, and the information access warehouse that runs off those two systems are also operated and maintained by our agency, and actually make up almost half of our staff. In terms of policies and procedures, we work to incorporate internal controls. We look at the authority that we have, the definitions, controls, and go through a whole range of things. I'm going to turn the presentation over to Lori Moe, who's our Assistant Commissioner for Accounting Services, and has the specific responsibility for many of the things we'll be talking about today.
Madam Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Lori Moe, Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. What I'm going to talk about today is some of the varied activities that we currently have in place at Minnesota Management and Budget to provide instruction and guidance and training to agencies in the area of sound financial management. I'll talk in a little more specificity about some of the individual issues that were described by the auditor in their presentation last week. I'll talk a little bit about the internal audit capacity in the state, and then we'll talk a little bit about the options we've been looking at for strengthening these procedures towards the end of the presentation. As Ms. Andrews said, we do have numerous policies and procedures in place on internal controls, on numerous procedures of transaction processing instructions. We have specific policies on the issues that were raised by the auditor last week in the areas of separation of duties, safeguarding receipts, the payroll system, time entry, an approval process, cell phones, travel, and documentation. The issue of separation of duties and limiting an employee's opportunity to perform various functions to only those specific areas where that they need to do their job is addressed in many ways. In many cases, we have that embedded directly in individual policies. We also have an annual process to review the access to our statewide accounting and payroll systems and direct agencies to review their employees who have access to those systems, review the authority that they've been granted, and report back to us that the authority that's in place is necessary for their operations. As a result of some findings by the Office of Legislative Auditor last year, we took some additional steps to address that issue on a statewide basis by adding additional review to the certification process and provided agencies with a report that specifically listed the employees that had access that was incompatible with other functions that they were performing, and asked agencies to take another look at those responsibilities and reduce the access to avoid the conflict where possible. We do, however, recognize in some cases, in some of the small operations in particular, there may be some difficulty in doing that. in those cases, we instruct agencies that they are to have compensating controls in place, maybe a review by the executive director or some other management position in the agency. And we ask them to review those compensating controls and certify that those were in place and functioning as designed. In the area of self-service time entry, we provide instructions on the employee completion of timesheets, the approval process, exception auditing, and payroll register reviews. Mr. Nobles made reference to a problem I'll get to that on a future slide. We have strengthened controls in response to a payment error that was identified out at one of the agencies to add some additional review steps. Whenever we revise policy or procedure, we look at not only the risk of that transaction, but the dollar value, the volume, and the impact on agencies, and try to come to the right balance of those factors in setting the state policies. Within the Accounting Services Division, there are three different units, an agency assistance unit, the group that runs the payroll system, and also a financial reporting unit. All of those divisions provide training for agencies on a variety of subjects. The range of need is broad in state agencies because we have the gamut from small boards and commissions to very large, very complex agencies. Likewise, we have a big range of what kind of accounting expertise they have in-house. And so we have various support levels depending on the agency's need, but we provide instructions on the correct use of the accounting and payroll systems, on everything from frequent flyer miles to the complex financial reporting subjects that some of the larger agencies face. We have been trying to work smarter with fewer resources, as all agencies have been facing budget reductions. In the payroll area in particular, we've had some success with delivering training through a web-based product and also through some self-study manuals and materials. And we have work groups that meet regularly with state agency members to provide information. The next slide, which is number 7 in your packet, is a list of the state agencies that currently have an internal audit capacity. There's a range of sizes here. This was a question earlier. You had in your packet some reports from 2 and 4 years ago on the status of these offices. I'll say since the last report was issued, there have been changes at 2 additional agencies. Minnesota Management and Budget ourselves reduced an additional position from this area, and at the Department of Administration there is no longer an internal auditor. For those
questions, since you touched on the report, So since the 2007 report, you've actually eliminated additional positions in the internal audit function. Is that correct? Is that what I?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. There's been one position reduction at Minnesota Management and Budget and one position reduction at the Department of Administration. I'm not aware of any others.
And this is, I guess, Madam Chair, not a question, but just and looked at this 2007 report, and in the third page, second full paragraph, the second sentence, it just, I find, fairly striking given the testimony that we've had so far today. It says, state budget reductions and examination of priorities triggered the elimination of auditor positions in the Department of Finance. And I guess I'm questioning the priority of state government eliminating internal audit functions given the testimony we've had about the problems that the lack of controls have had across many agencies and within services that, according to 2005 report, you used to provide to a lot of these small agencies, boards, and commissions. That seems like a strange priority, and it seems like we're seeing the effects of that right now. Do you have, I mean, how do you continue to function without those auditors in position?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, first of all, it's important to know kind of where we started there, which was, I would say, this function has always been, we never had a large staff there, and so our ability to follow up in that respect, when we talk about the most recent position that was eliminated, was really having a person who took the OLA reports and followed up with agencies, sent them letters to be sure that they were following up, and that was about the way that we were able to follow up. We certainly have throughout our agency a number of people having contacts with agencies. They're aware of the audits. They talk with the agencies about what's going on, but having that specific position to do that, we had to eliminate. This is, again, in the context of an agency that operates and maintains the statewide systems. There's a limit to what we can do in terms of reducing our staff to those systems, and so we still have to get the payroll out. We still have to do those things. We all the time are looking at ways to do it more efficiently, but frankly, that generally becomes the first priority of making sure that the actual systems run. Beyond that, we don't have a lot of other places in the agency to go. So when we lose 10, 12 positions, one of them has to come from that area. Not a good set of decisions, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, at all.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess then I'd make a point that I suppose Representative Rukavina would like to make, which is that if you continue to try to cut things out of here, things are going to start to fall apart. Money is going to start leaving the state coffers, as I think Mr. Nobles has testified to. In the 2005 report, it says that the Department of Finance internal audit function performed audits of agencies without internal audit functions, boards, and councils to determine compliance with applicable laws, policies, and procedures. If you don't have those people performing that job anymore, then I presume those boards, councils, and agencies that were using your services before no longer have that. Is that, or was something done to help move that along? In the absence of your people being able to provide that service?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, Assistant Commissioner Moe may want to come in with more detail here, but just as in general terms, when we've eliminated those positions, we certainly recognize the functions still needed to be done. So we looked at other ways to do that within the agency, shifting the positions to other people, including it in the positions of people that were already there or doing other things. And so we knew that it probably wasn't going to be done as well, but we certainly still recognize the need to do it. Again, those are part of the set of decisions that need to be made that aren't always good.
And Madam Chair, I don't not trying to point to agency staff as being responsible for this ultimately. The 2007 report, which said that internal audit is not a priority or has been reduced in its level of priority, was signed by the Commissioner of Finance and the Commissioner of Administration. This goes to a fairly high level within the leadership of state government and the management of state government. It's not the people who are trying to continue to run the agency with very few dollars that are, I think, the place to find responsibility. But if millions of dollars are walking out the door, I think we should question the priorities of the people who sign the internal audit report, including the commissioner. You don't need to comment on that.
Madam Chair, members, I'll make one additional comment on that. When we had a small unit for internal audit capacity within the Department of Finance,
We were never in a position to provide that service for the large agencies. The goal was to have some resources available to those small boards that would not have a shop in-house. With the elimination of those positions, certainly our capacity is greatly reduced. We do have some folks with accounting and audit professionals who work in our financial reporting area that have continued to do some audit work in the less busy portion of the year to meet the highest priority needs.
Madam Chair, quick question. I'm looking at the same thing that Representative Winkler was talking about, page 3 of 4 in the 2007 report. I just want to make sure, how many positions are there right now? It says as of 2007 that it triggered the elimination of auditor positions. Does that mean all of them were eliminated, or are there any left?
Madam Chair, members, that as a separate unit, that no longer exists within the agency. But as I say, there's some capacity within that broader division to provide some of the highest priority requests.
Well, Madam Chair, if there are no internal auditors left, and if only 8, according to your handout, if only 8 state agencies have their own internal offices, the way I read it, then there is nobody other than the Office of Legislative Auditor as of ACSOC. There's no one doing internal audits because they don't have internal auditors and you don't have auditors anymore. So it's really either self-policing or the Office of Legislative Auditor. Am I missing something?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I think that part of this goes to the definition of auditing, because in terms of internal control, that is what we do. We are working with agencies, again, more on we talk about it more as a front-end interaction, where we work with them to look at the training. We figure out what training we think that we can provide to help them understand what they should be doing. We put policies in place. We certainly, on a daily basis, have many people working with agencies to resolve issues, to be sure that we're helping agencies work through problems as they arise, and to be proactive where we can be. Do we have an auditing function in the agency? No, we don't. I also just want to talk about, as we talked about elimination, for example, of that last position. If it was a full-blown auditing function, and we felt that it was really being effective, we wouldn't have eliminated it. We were at the place of saying, we have this one position. It's not, we know, able to prevent a range of problems that we want to do. We'll instead redouble our efforts on the training and eliminate a fairly low-level position. Again, as we look forward, that's not the solution we're going to be going to either, and we look forward to talking with you about where we want to go, because this isn't where we want to be either. Again, those decisions to cut those positions were difficult, very difficult.
Madam Chair?
Representative Taylor.
Thank you. I used to serve on the Transportation Committee, and one of the conversations that still actually leaves the chill for me is that many of the inspections of our bridges were being done in a timely fashion and very thorough. But there wasn't a follow-up about, literally, we had bolts from gusset plates, attaching gusset plates to members of bridges out and sitting on a weld plate, and no one was making sure that the problems found were being resolved. And I just think about the public safety and accountability pieces that we have as a responsibility as legislators and as public employees to eliminate the follow-up position, the position responsible for going through the legislative auditor reports, and hopefully, I assume, also some internal audit reports, and make sure that those changes are being made. It's just shocking, and I think that to each of us sitting here at the table, our responsibility is becoming even more grave by the moment that we now have to do that work ourselves to make sure that the changes that have been recommended by our internal and external auditors are being made. And I think it's time that we recognize that is our task this year, and to make sure not only that we do the structural reform, but
I plan on taking home every single legislative audit report that has been issued in the last 2 or 3 years and finding a way to go through and make sure that every single one of those questions and the recommendations is being followed up on. I dare not ask Mr. Nobles in his office to do it because they're clearly overworked.
Madam Chair and let's see, Ms. Andrews? I'm listening to all of this and I'm looking at the state agencies that have internal offices, and I listened to the testimony of Mr. Nobles before saying that his suggestion was that we needed to shift orientation. But what's not adding up to me, and perhaps Madam Chair can set me straight on this since she's got much more experience in the legislature than I do, what I don't understand is we're talking about losing one auditing position. We're talking about other agencies not having any. We're talking about, is there enough money in the state budget to perhaps hire one or two auditors? And then we have the Office of the Legislative Auditor with 60 auditors. So I'm trying to figure out why there's 60 auditors there and we don't have any internal auditors here. So maybe you could answer this. Maybe you heard what Mr. Noble said before. Do you think that we're prioritizing correctly? Well, or maybe Madam Chair could provide some background as to, because to me it just doesn't make sense. We've got no internal audits in many of these agencies, but we got 60.
You know, we run our fairs, and I guess the answer is that the legislature's put a priority on this, on the advice of the Legislative Auditor's Office, and the executive branch hasn't put a priority on it.
Well, Madam Chair, all the Legislative Auditor's Office does is audit, whereas the state agencies have many different functions, so I think that's a little bit of an unfair statement.
Well, I think when you look at these two reports, I think one of the things, the last people I want to blame are the two people sitting in front of us, for sure. But I think we've seen a lack of prioritization. I mean, one of the things is I know when I chaired a committee that had a bigger jurisdiction than this current committee has, I know I heard every legislative audit report that touched what that committee did. And I didn't just say that the commission, which always hears the reports, would do it. Until this discussion started, I never really felt, I have a guilt that comes on. I never really thought that it should also be an issue in the Department of Finance, and that we actually should have been paying more attention to all of these legislative audit reports over the years. So, I just thought, okay, there's other people looking at this. And the thing that really hit me and that's the thing that I've tried to try and figure out is that I've done it a lot more for information management and computer stuff, and the $8 million just thrown out on the health match. And we actually got, when I asked about that, I was told it was federal funding. So I know, because I've put in statute a lot of the steps that we do for control. And I said, well, why didn't any of these steps work? You don't do an appropriation unless these things are in place. And the answer was that the Department of Health and Human Services gets automatically appropriated the federal funds that come in because they get so much federal funds in. Now, one of the things that's come out of that is that Commissioner Ludeman deserves enormous credit for having the guts to pull the plug at $8 million. There are many people who've been in that position who've left $20 million, $30 million, and as soon as you do it, you have to admit that you're wrong. But, I think that this was a good discussion for this committee to start on, and I think we're going to kind of look and see what can be done. I mean, I think we're obviously at the end of our time. I know Mr. Downey has a question. I think we're going to bring you guys back to finish this, and we'll probably give you some additional questions to put in also. But I think we have to think, and I think the idea, which I had never had before until it was kind of presented to us by Mr. Noble, is to clearly give the idea that every department ought to have its own internal audit. Like, I just thought that this horrendous stuff that went on with we always think it's just an individual, you know, with Sonia Pitts and with transportation. I said, well, that's a transportation problem. You know, I think I now believe that it's a administration and finance problem too. And, you know, all I can do is apologize for not paying more attention to it. But, you know, I think that we will. And I think that we'll kind of think about cost-effective ways of dealing with it. And the idea of, besides the legislative auditor's function, but I think the idea of it was interesting that Obama's first appointment was kind of a financial general, kind of troubleshooter within the federal government. It was before he did any of these other, I forgot the name, I just noted he appointed a woman, which I always thought was appropriate. So I think maybe that's the kind of thing that we might need in state government. Because I think there is, you know, the legislative auditor obviously gets a lot of respect, but it still is someone coming in afterwards. And the idea of doing things like, what are the questions I'm going to ask? And I don't want an answer today because we're already beyond our time. I guess the last new commissioner was transportation. I don't know if anyone else is. But why don't you just take us through what information new commission has got in terms of their responsibilities in this issue. Anyway, Mr. Down.
Actually, I don't have a question. I'll make my comment very brief, but I share Representative Kalin's sentiment that the legislature does have some obligation, and as a service provider to the public sector in a previous life, I think that was one observation of mine, was that the legislature perhaps did not have as much of an oversight function as it probably should. So I share that, and I think it's a fine line we walk, but a great one for this committee to face. Secondly, I would suggest that based on what I saw in the private sector, I think the sense that simply throwing bodies at these problems is really the only solution doesn't ring true. Once you have an audit program well established and you systematize it and you actually use that to funnel process improvement and actually improve the business, you can substantially reduce the internal audit function. I think that's an opportunity we have here as a state. And I think it probably points to a bigger initiative that I would like to bring before the committee at some point, and that is, you know, where do these business functions occur, and are there some where we could move to a more shared service model across state agencies? That's a bigger and broader issue, but this issue today I think is pointing towards that too, so thank you.
I think that was a suggestion in the, at least implied suggestion in the Noble's letter to Winkler. Mr. Noble.
Minister, I know you want to wrap up, but I just want to say one thing in response to where we're going with this. I really appreciate the fact that you see a role for auditors, both the external auditors in the legislative auditor's office and internal auditors. But I really want to emphasize this point. We are not going to have the level of financial integrity and accountability unless every account clerk, every financial manager in state government has infused within them these concepts of internal control. You know, let's not say that the answer is just more auditors. We will never audit our way to good government. And that's why I think this, Representative Tevin, is not just a matter of how many internal auditors we have or how many we've lost. It is this emphasis on financial integrity, internal control, that needs to be there every time any account clerk sits down and processes a financial transaction. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're aiming for. Auditors have a role to play, but we need to do more in the training of a new commissioner of transportation and a new account clerk in the Department of Transportation about what being in the public sector means in terms of financial integrity and accountability. So that's what we're aiming for. It isn't just a matter of counting bodies of how many internal auditors or external auditors we have. It is about letting everybody know what the expectation is in terms of handling the public's money.
Okay. thanks is good. Oh, approved minutes. I'm going to send a move to approve the minutes. Down each other.
Okay.
Minutes are all those who say aye.
Aye.
Yeah, meeting adjourned.